Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on the companies we mention. Please do your own research.
Hello and good evening and welcome to Monday Upbeat Markets with me, Graham Dixon.
And me, Kevin Hornsby.
Kevin, how was your Christmas?
It was good. I started a sort of fast about the 7th of December. I started eating only one meal a day. For Christmas Day and Boxing Day, I gave myself a break. So I only had I had two meals on both of those days. So it's a hard time to do a fast, I can tell you that, because there's food everywhere. We've had parties galore. We've had lots of fun. It's been good. And the kids have enjoyed themselves. So, yeah, it's all good.
Well, that's fascinating to have a fast on Christmas Day. It's alternative Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. No, on Christmas Day, I didn't really fast. I had two meals. So, all good.
Yeah, good. Okay, so what we're here for today, Kevin? It's a special, particularly special day for Monday Upbeat Markets.
Yeah, we're gonna give our inaugural Mum's Picks for 2026. So we're gonna give you 12 stocks that we think have got a great chance of going up in value, because ultimately, isn't that what we're all here for? Effectively, yes, we love the story, but we want things to go up in value. And then on top of that, at the end, we'll give you the moonshots, which we think could literally go to the moon or could not go to the moon. But our 12 stocks, we feel there is definitely good potential. As you were saying before we started, Graham, there is risk in this size of market cap, more so than any of the bigger stocks.
The spread.
Because the spread, things can happen to them. So, you know, We add an element of caution, though at the same time, I'm happy to quote what we did in the roast last year, the 12 stocks that me and Phil and Charles picked did an average of over 85% per pick, and we're aiming for something similar. So, you know, this is not for the faint-hearted, but at the same time, we know that if you do your research and you know the stocks, you've got a good chance of doing well. So we're going to let you kick off, Graham. Your first stock is?
Well, my first stock is Energy Pathways. EPP is the ticker. Share price is 4p. Market cap's about £10 million. Why Energy Pathways? Well, they have this project called the Mesh Project, which is the Marham Energy Storage Hub, which is based in the northwest of England, in the Lancashire coast. Well, it's in the Irish Sea. And basically what they've got is they've got this natural gas deposits, which at some stage they will deplete. That will be replaced with hydrogen gas and compressed air. And that can be used at times when the wind isn't blowing, or when there is a shortage of energy to power up the homes in the northwest of England. And there's so much more potential beyond that. There's graphite potential, there's ammonia potential. They've done deals with very interesting people like Siemens, Wood Group, Costain, Hazer, KBR. So they've gone into bed with all these, you know, the good and the great. They've just recently complete, well, I say recently, it was in October, wasn't it, Kevin? They did a placing at 6p, raising £1.35 million. They're currently around 4p, which seems a bit unjustified given, you know, the milestones that they've achieved. And they have massive upside, in my opinion. I mean, I think we touched upon when we interviewed Ben Klub about just the graphite alone. The production of 60,000 tons of graphite at $10,000 a ton, we talked, you know, it could be potentially enormous, but there's a lot of proving to be.
Yeah, to get to that point. I mean, yeah, that's $600 million a year. That's just mental. I mean, who they've sort of got joint ventures with and tie-ups with is literally the who's who of this situation. Now, for me, why I would be you know, keen to support this one is simply because the UK doesn't have a choice, right? The scenario is that we are burning through £1 billion worth of cash at the minute, just paying wind farms for energy that isn't being used. If we continue to 2030 on this same trajectory, those same wind farms will have to be paid £8 billion by the British government if we don't find a way of storing this energy. Now, the scenario is that whichever government comes in, they don't have a choice because these contracts are set in stone. They exist already. It's not like we can change the game. The game has to carry on. And the scenario is this will be multifaceted. You've got graphite, you've got ammonia that will be produced as well, which we don't have a production of that in the UK. You'll have further gas coming out of the ground. But more importantly, and I think the thing that really gets me is the Siemens tie-up and the fact that they can take this pretty much anywhere in the world. I think this will be a one of many in the future, and that will mean that Energy Pathways will probably become worth hundreds of millions, if not billions of pounds. So yes, as we said at the start, there's risks into it, but it is now a special project in the UK. It has designation of S35, and I know Charles has done a lot of articles on it as well, so if you want to read up more on those, go for it. But my view is that once that license comes in and the sort of the go button is pressed, which I think is going to happen in the first quarter of 2026, then we're going to have a massive re-rate because it's going to be worth a lot more money.
Yeah. And of course, the Centrica, with their Rough storage asset on the other side of England, is, you know, depleting. It's deteriorating. It's an old rust bucket. I think it was installed in 1985, and it's creaking at all the seals. And I think, you know, what's the next best alternative? I think the mesh project is sizably bigger than the rough storage project. So you kind of question, you know, what alternative does the government have but to approve this?
No, it's a special project now, and I think it's been approved. I don't think there's going to be an issue, but people are waiting for the rubber stamp. In terms of the licenses, but you know, Ed Miliband doesn't have a choice. I think that's the reality of the situation. And not only doesn't have a choice, is well behind it. You know, speaking to Ben, you know, they want it to work. So I'm pretty sure that over the next year or two, it's going to have a lot of momentum and a lot of emphasis on needing to happen for the benefit of all UK citizens. It's like a pretty bizarre one.
And just on the cash front, they had £1.35 million of cash from the funds that were raised recently. They, at their interims, they burnt £600,000. So that's about £100,000 a month. So in theory, they would have over a year's worth of not having to raise any capital based on the current cash burn. But you know, who knows what expenses come through the post between now and then.
Yeah, I think there'll be institutions come on board and the cash won't be an issue, I think, after a period of time. But, you know, again, that has to happen. So, but I think once one institution comes on from a sort of green perspective, then I think the rest is going to follow.
Just put me on to the next one. Just give me one. What should we be, you know, what's the negative side? What could go wrong with Energy Pathways?
Okay, what could go wrong is the government drop the ball and don't give them the license, which, yeah, considering they've given them an S35, is highly, highly, highly unlikely. But it could happen, and it could happen. It could be, you know, delayed. It could be people, you know, it could be people kicking up a fuss over nothing. The thing is, this is new. The government, and any government who's going to be dealing with this, has never dealt with this before. So it's a completely new concept. And, you know, from Energy Pathways being a small company that was going to basically take some gas out, have some potential storage, and then move on to the next gas project, you know, it's become this monster, if you like, that is effectively going to not solve, but certainly help the UK energy system.
Okay. So let's move on to the next one then, Kevin.
Okay, so the next one I've chosen is Greatland Resources now, what was GGP, Greatland Gold. Now, why have I chosen it? Well, something to do with metal, I think, and gold and copper and a sprinkling of silver in there as well. Greatland Gold, effectively now, opposed to its peers in Australia, now that it's got listed in Australia as well as London, it's very undervalued in my view. Greatland probably is going to have more than enough cash come the middle of next year to basically pay for Havieron without any debt. So you're going to have a completely debt-free company producing gold, copper, silver, and basically kicking off cash like it's going out of fashion, basically. And what I then see is an expansion around itself in the Paterson area of Australia to buy up other tenures to progress them, as well as the ones that they already have. They have a big asset there that potentially has a lot of tungsten, and as we know from GMET, that tungsten is extremely well. Sean Day, I think, knows what he's doing. He took with the team, he took North Star from next to nothing to being worth billions of pounds as a company. And I see that's what's going to happen with Greatland Gold. With gold prices at 4,550 ounces, sorry, dollars per ounce, I just can't see how it's not going to continue to go up, to be honest.
The market cap, Kevin, right now.
Okay, so the market cap of Greatland in Australian dollars is 7.18 billion Australian dollars, which I think is about 3.5 billion British pounds. For a company that effectively could be kicking off £1 billion or more in free cash flow, that is so cheap. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, within a year and a half of production, they're probably going to have $750 million or more of cash in the bank to pay for Havieron. And that was before we've seen the increase in prices. And what we also have to look at is the copper price has now gone up to close to $13,000 a ton. And they've been operating at 10 to 11,000 over the last period of time. So that's another 15, 20% straight to the bottom line. It's not like it costs them more to do it. It goes straight to the bottom line. So hand on heart, can't see how Greatland Gold isn't going to go up this year unless we have some sort of, I mean, you're going to say, well, why could it go wrong? Well, it could go wrong if the metal prices crash. Do we think the metal prices are going to crash?
It's a geared play on the gold price. So if the gold price
Yeah, completely.
goes, probably go up
Completely.
30-40% or something. Is it something like that?
If the gold price goes up 20%, then Greatland should do 100% return. I mean that's basically what we're looking at. And everyone's predicting gold 5 to 6,000. So if gold goes 5 to 6,000, copper goes, I mean my prediction is 15,000 for copper. So if copper goes up that way, we've also got 20% uplift in that. Silver's going bananas as well, and there's some silver in there as well. Then 20% increase in the metals is going to at least five times the value for Greatland Resources. So, and that's the same with all of the resource plays we're going to talk about today. But anyway, let's get on to those. So the
All
next
right.
one, and just to tell you the price at the minute that we picked this out is £5.25 is the current share price. Haydale.
Yeah, so Haydale Graphene, ticker is HAYD, market cap. They just raised £5.75 million at 0.5p. If you include those shares haven't come in, they don't get issued until the 6th of January. But if you include those extra shares, the market cap at the current price is about £38 million. Okay. Now, what is Haydale Graphene? Haydale Graphene was kind of this new tech that appeared on the market, I don't know, 8 years ago. It was pretty much a very sort of experimental company. It hadn't really found its feet. And then at one stage, a backer came in and said, right, we'd like to put new management in place. We'd like to put serious financial backing into it. And we want you to focus on one thing. And that one thing is underfloor heating. So they've created this subsidiary called Just Heat. And all I can say, Kevin, is it's imagine getting a very wide duct tape, lacing it with this graphene fluid. Remember, graphene is a fantastic conductor of electricity. It's water resistant. It's 200 times stronger than steel, et cetera, et cetera. So it's got lots of interesting qualities that's still, being worked out as time progresses. Anyway, the whole idea is this process is kind of, I don't know, stuck under the boards, yeah, and that heat that's generated, from effectively through underfloor heating, is done at a fraction of what it would do, be done when it's done with these pipes that typically go underneath. How they do it, and there's better distribution. So there's massive savings, huge, better quality of distribution of the heat, and it's very simple tech. Now they've just acquired a company, which is going to allow them to increase their customers by an exponential amount. Barclays have now inherited a 15% stake in Heydel Graphene because they owned a large stake of the company they've just acquired. And this is about acquiring nil cost acquisition customers. So the amount, I can imagine this will be social housing, this could be in new developments, also could be retrofitted as well. So I just think this, once they've conquered this, they can apply this graphene to other verticals. And that's my, something I think could do extremely well. It had a good year last year, but at 0.5p and a £38 million market cap, I think the upside's material.
Very good. I can see a loan based on the one product that if they get it right, it will be worth more than it is now, that's for sure. And obviously, you're getting in right now at a bit less than the raise price, and have that opportunity for the upside. So yeah, let's keep an eye on that one.
So I think, Kevin, on the sort of downside is that, they've not really had any material sort of revenue or material profits at all. They've always relied on shareholder cash in order to get them where they are. So that this year, really, now they've got this acquisition, I'm hoping for Heydel Graphene shareholders that they can actually take this through to profitability and not have to rely on shareholders for working capital. But we will only,
Yeah.
time will tell.
Time will tell. And it sounds like you're a shareholder, so good luck.
I'm not a
Right.
shareholder. I'm not a shareholder, but I
Okay.
it's something I'm interested in.
Okay. Well, one I am a shareholder of is the next one, which is Ajax, which I keep wanting to call Ajax, but because of the football team. But Ajax, been speaking with Ippolito, who is the CEO there. Young guy, very, very aggressively going for what it is. Basically, in a nutshell, this is a silver, copper, gold play in South America. Okay, so he's picked up assets for next to nothing around South America. What really attracts me is the silver, because based on what's happening in the silver market, I think we're going to be looking at $100 silver even before the new year. There was $91 being paid for silver in Shanghai over the weekend, from what I can gather. The futures market finished at 77, or sorry, $79. But the four projects, the Eureka project, which actually they bought for next to nothing from Bazant Resources, mainly I think because Bazant was never going to go to South America, so therefore wasn't going to happen. That potentially has 620,000 tons of contained copper, 52,000 ounces of gold, and they're just historic estimates. You've got the Leon project with 41,000 tons of contained copper, 3.2 million ounces of silver. How much is that worth now? And then you've got the Paguanta, which is 6.8 million ounces of silver, 265 million pounds of zinc, 74 million pounds of lead. You've got the Piera Veloa with 110 ounces of gold, and effectively all except for the Piera Veloa asset is JORC, so it's been established that, you know, these assets are there. They also, between Christmas and New Year, got another asset which was historically just silver, or not just silver, but majority silver. So between those assets, there was somewhere in the region of, now somebody's guessing at these figures, okay, other than these JORC thing, which says 10 million, but somewhere in the region of another 30 million ounces of silver. So you got 40 million ounces of silver that potentially is JORC at $100 an ounce. Silver is, you know, you do the maths, that is $4 billion.
Yeah.
It's $4 billion, I think.
What, they own these 100%, Kev?
They own them all 100%. The market cap is £5 million. They just raised at 5.5p. You can buy them for 5.5p now, and I have. For clarity, I was in the raise as well. But the reality of the situation is the assets they have now collected. They now have a couple of million pounds or more in the bank, so the actual value of what they own is only 3 million pounds. So for me, this is a bananas one. This could be 10 bags even in a year if they just get even one of these assets working. I mean, if you look at the copper, there is contained copper of over 700,000 tons. Now, you know, you do the maths, copper is now approaching 13,000. 700,000 tons of contained copper at 13,000, I think, is just less than $1 billion as well.
It's one of those situations. I mean, I was involved in a stock quite a few years ago now where the difference of the value of the product under the ground and the market cap of the company was just like this massive gulf. And, you know, I remember I staggered when I was told, and I thought, right, okay, I'm going to back this company and see what happens. It turned out to be an absolute outright success. It just so happened. But sometimes you say to yourself, well, you know, this is too good to be true. They've got all this potential, but it's only 5 million. What's the catch? You know, is there a catch?
Well, the catch is it only listed about a month ago.
Right. Okay.
Oh, sorry, 6 months ago. So it's on Aquis. It only listed 6 months ago. Nobody knows about it. That's the reality of the situation.
That's the reality. Yeah.
You know, so it's one of the reasons why I've chosen it as well, is because it needs to be known that people, and I mean, I presume you're referring to probably Eurasia Mining or something like that, UAE, where, you know, we've gone through this story before with another company called GMET, who effectively had billions in the ground, market cap of 7 or 8 million quid. And now here we are, they're going to go on to the the New York Stock Exchange. And, you know, it's probably going to be worth a billion pounds with 5, 6, 7 billion pounds in the ground valuation on an asset like tungsten in that case, which has done very well. Now, my view is this is going to be a hell of a silver play with a hell of a copper play as well. And on the upside of that, you've got 162,000 ounces of gold just thrown in for a bit of luck. That's over $500 million as well.
All right, let me ask you, because you're operating in South America, right? And South America is, you know, it's mainly socialist countries, not Argentina, but primarily, you know, Brazil, Chile.
Yeah, we're in Brazil, Chile, Argentina.
Yeah, okay. Where is the predominant resource, would you say? Where is most of
the Eureka project is in Argentina.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you've got Milei, who is, you know, pro-markets, yeah, pro-capitalism.
Listen, there is political risk there, just like with anything else. But would you class that political risk worse than being in parts of Africa? I don't think so. Okay. Would you say that those countries are in a situation where they have historical backgrounds in mining? Yes, they do. Yeah, so I don't think that. And the good news is that Hipólito speaks fluent Spanish. And also he can understand the Portuguese as well. So you've got a young dynamic CEO in countries that he can speak the language. He understands, I think, the culture because he's lived there before, and I think it's got a hell of a good chance. Now, could have mud on my face in a year's time, but I don't genuinely think so. I think with the way the metals are going, I think could be fantastic. Right. Yeah. What I would say to you is a final thing: £5 million market cap, and the reality of the situation is if any one of these products or projects comes in, the five projects they own, any one of them comes in as normal, this is a 10 bagger because it'll be worth £50 million, any one of these four or five projects.
Okay, let's move on to the next one, Kevin. And this one, in this instance, is Upland Resources. UPL is the ticker. Share price 2.8p, market cap's about £45 million. What do Upland Resources do? They are explorers, developers in Southeast Asia. And what do I mean by Southeast Asia? I'm talking about Malaysia, specifically the Sarawak project. And then you've got Brunei, and now they've just ventured into Indonesia. The reason why it suddenly piqued my interest is a chap by the name of Mark Bruner has suddenly come in and backed Uplands through his vehicle called Lost Soldier. Mark Bruner had a company. I think he's about 80 years old, Mark Bruner. So he's no spring chicken.
He's a
young chap, but he's in there probably to do things in a rush, I would imagine, to set his legacy. He's already got a good legacy. So he got involved in a company called Ultra Petroleum, which had at the time when they floated Ultra Petroleum, I don't know what the market cap was, but their share price was about 15 cents. And a few years later, well, 8 years later to be precise, it hit $200 a share. So if you put $1,000 in whenever they set it up in 1998 and then sold it 8 years later, you could have, you know, turned that $1,000 into $1.3 million. And that's sort of, you get an idea. Yeah. And he likes, you know, he's one of those guys who likes to do alternate exploration. And by that, you know, going into the source rock, drilling into it, horizontal drilling, and, you know, getting difficult oil out of the ground. And that's exactly where sort of Southeast Asia, from what I understand, has been sort of underexplored and underdeveloped, is that they haven't done this sort of fracking side of things to the extent as they have done in America. And that leaves a whole sort of, you know, vast opportunity for anyone that goes and ventures there.
Very good. Sounds like a plan. What sort of market capitalization has it got?
So it's currently £45 million. Their share price, I mean, their shares have been down as low as a penny. They hit about 4p. They're currently about 2.8p. They did some kind of share swap where Uplands took a stake in a specific project within Lost Soldier's assets. And they effectively invested about $4.5 million. And by return, Lost Soldier took a stake in Uplands at 3.3p for about, I think, £3.3 million, issuing 100 million shares. So, yeah, I mean, there's, I think, considerable upside in Uplands. But, you know, they do, I think they had about £3.5 million of cash in June. Their burn is about, about £1 million, £1.5 million a year. So they've got, you know, reasonable cash resources, but once they start drilling, then that's when the cash burn goes considerably up. But then hopefully that's when Lost Soldier will step in and they'll farm into that, hopefully.
Very good. Okay, so an oil play.
An oil play.
Very good. Okay, the next one we've got is a biotech company called Salvanus. Now, basically during 2025, this had a big change. It was able to purchase Awaken in the US for very little money. And this brought along with it a Professor Nutt, who they've also signed. And effectively, this is a system or a drug, which is basically ketamine-based, that you take, and then you also have therapy. And the results were that 86% of people who are alcoholics, severe alcoholics, stopped drinking for a period of 6 months or more. So in the initial trials, which have been taking place in the NHS, it's worked. That's SVNS-01. They have SVNS-02, which is going to be following a situation that Johnson & Johnson have used for ketamine in the US. And they're looking for the bridging of the first stages of that drug. And that is, again, alcohol dependence, but in the US, and there's 29 million people with alcohol dependence in the US. And then you've got SVN 14, which is for PTSD. They had SVN 15, which has just been announced, which is for cocaine and amphetamine addictions. I think they're going to have a deal in the first quarter of this year. It's got a market capitalization of around 17, 18 million pounds now. Its counterparts in the US are all worth hundreds of millions, and one of them's worth over $1 billion. 17 million pounds now. I think when one deal comes, this is gonna 10 times. Simple as that. Now, yeah. What are the risks? They don't come. The deals don't come, and they have to finish. Now, if that happens, then maybe they will have to find another partner or raise or whatever. But when the first deal comes, all bets are off. They probably won't have to raise almost ever again, because it's going to be worth anything from probably 25 to 50 million pounds in cash payments, minimum. This is the norm for this type of product. So
it's an interesting sort of combination of like the treatment along with therapy, but isn't that is that quite easily to duplicate, or is it their specific treatment?
If you have the patents, then you can't duplicate it. So yeah, and maybe in other parts of the world it will be duplicated, but certainly in the US and the UK, etc., no, you won't be able to duplicate it. They have even the therapy will be patented, and it will not necessarily be delivered by a human. It will be delivered by a computer as well.
So the OSC, so the therapy is bespoke to the drug that they dish out to the patient.
Yeah. So they've been training therapists as well. So then you have the drug and the therapist, and they both give, basically what happens is, I think psychologically, the ketamine allows you to think more freely and out of your normal situation. Then you have therapy, and the therapy then allows you to use your probably frontal cortex instead of your amygdala, which is yes or no situation, which is basically what most addiction is around. And the frontal cortex then says, why am I drinking and destroying my life? And then tries to give you solutions to not drink. And you solve the problem yourself then, because your brain allows you to start to think, which is what happens when any of us go into crazy situations. It normally is because our amygdala is in control. It's like the security guard of the brain. The amygdala effectively is black and white, yes or no. And we get ourselves into a big mess. Have you ever been in a big mess like that?
No, but I was just thinking about my sugar addiction. If they can create something for a
Yeah.
sugar addiction.
I've been in a big mess like that a few times in my life where I just couldn't get out of black and white thinking. You know, it was either a disaster or it was wonderful. And
Right.
that effectively is black and white thinking. And when you go down that tunnel and you start thinking black, 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 you can't get out of it. And that's like the drink, 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 drink will solve my problem, or the drug, 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 drug will solve my problem. Well, the
See
ketamine
that.
allows you to get out of that. It basically puts the amygdala to sleep and lets you use your frontal cortex, which means you think. Because I mean, it's a statement, you know, when anybody is addicted to literally anything, they become stupid. Why are they stupid? Because the amygdala is taken over, and the amygdala is yes or no. It doesn't have any thinking process whatsoever. So we have to get past that and go to the frontal cortex. And when you use your frontal cortex, you actually think and you're not stupid anymore. So there you go. Anyway.
The ketamine makes you go. The ketamine makes you go use your frontal cortex, but then
Correct.
Sylvanus that has the therapy to sort of
So
regulate
basically
that.
what you're doing is you're putting your amygdala to sleep, which basically allows you to think, and then
Yeah.
you have the therapy while you're thinking.
So basically, you get the same sort of effect as what you would with ketamine, but you're doing it with a legal prescription. Is that right? Am I right
Yes.
in saying that? Am
Yeah,
I?
absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of delivery scenarios as well. The one that they've got in the US is like on your tongue. You take a strip of it, I think, on your tongue, and it melts. And I mean, again, the other reason why I really like this company is Anthony, who's an Irish guy. I love the way he pronounces his threes. And you know, the scenario is these are well connected and driven people, and I think this company is going to be a major success.
I remember I met a major shareholder a few years back, and he's been very successful. Him and his father have been very successful in their own rights. They've made some fantastic calls, and I remember him telling me about this company. And based on his track record, I wouldn't bet against him.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so one that we're both involved with is Delta Gold Technologies, which is our next one. Do you want to give us your thoughts on that one?
What do I think of Delta Gold Technologies? Very interesting. Quantum computing, it's a huge area. Their market cap is tiny. I think it's, was it, Kevin, about 7 million pounds in that
Yeah,
region.
7 or 8 million pounds.
The similar companies may be more advanced than Delta Technologies in terms of their research, but they are sort of trading in the hundreds of millions, if not the billions. So, yeah, I mean the potential's enormous, but Kevin, what would you expand on?
Well, I'm backing this one because of the CEO, okay, and the team behind the CEO. So you've got Mr. Jones, Mike Jones, or Michael Jones, who has done this before with other companies. He's a bit of an oddball, to be honest. I like him very much, and he'll laugh when he hears this, I'm sure. He's odd because he reads scientific manuals and scientific papers all the time, especially in relation to the metals, okay? Because he's a geologist as well. He's a geologist with GMET, who we'll come on to in a minute. So Guardian Metal Resources, both him and Oliver and Jamie Tosh and Mark Burnett, who are all involved in GMET, are all involved in Delta Gold. Okay, they came up with the idea through Michael, and they have then raised the money and listed the company. Now, why is it a good idea? Qubits are things that you need to run a quantum computer. The qubit cannot be stable at the minute. Okay, it makes too many errors, too many problems. The reason being is because the speed it creates, the computation, it creates too much heat. So the heat is causing it to make many, many mistakes. Now, Michael read a paper on the nanostate of gold. Why would you read that? not me to answer, but why the hell would you read that? But he did. He read this, went to a professor that he knows at Toronto University, who just so happens to be the expert in quantum computing, and said, what do you think about this nano state of gold in reference to something else? Now, Harry went away, investigated it, and Michael never thought anything of it. And 6 months later, the guy came back and said, you're onto something here. This could work, but not in what you're talking about, in quantum computers. The nano state of gold works in a certain way that means that the qubit would be stable and work at room temperature, in inverted commas, maybe some cooling. So they have now taken this, where we in Delta Gold, and I say we because I am a shareholder, Delta Gold has now got a deal with Toronto University that any IP that comes out of Toronto University to do with this scheme is now 100% owned by Delta Gold. Okay. Now, what's now happened is Harry, who's the guy, who's the professor in Toronto, is a world expert in quantum computing, has started to talk to other universities around the world and some in the United Kingdom. So they're now having conversations with those people in the United Kingdom. They raise money in the IPO and they're going to be able to fund other universities if they want to come on board. And that's where the exciting part comes in. Now, one company in the US has done this for a university in Chicago, and the market cap of that company is over $1 billion, and it hasn't discovered anything of any note. Oxford Dynamics basically discovered a switch mechanism that you can use to measure something in a quantum qubit. And it was sold or bought by a US company for $1.05 billion earlier in 2025. So is Delta Gold worth some of your money at £7 million market capitalization? When, if they find anything, and I think within 12 months we will have several patents on this nano state gold, if they find anything, it could be worth hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. Simple as that. I'm in it on the basis that, you know, this could retire me, basically. If you have some of this stock, it could go to the moon. If they don't find anything in the short term, as in the next year or so, if they have these connections with these universities, I think that alone is going to value this company at 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 million pounds. That's my view, just on the potential that they could find something. And other companies in this area will be very interested in owning this IP.
And from what I remember, Kevin, they raised £2.5 million at the IPO. I think they had some money from previous rounds as well, but £2.5 million from the IPO. And they've committed to the University of Toronto $1 million a year, or Canadian dollars a year, I think. So that should be enough to fund that all the way through. Do you think that they will, over the next 3 years, that they would take advantage of the capital markets? Or do you think they'll just see it right through to the year?
There's no doubt, and I haven't had conversations with them, but I've had conversations with other people who are invested in this. And I don't think there's any doubt that there will be funds wishing to be involved in this. Not you and me punters. I think you and me punters are finished in this investment. I think they will place money from funds from this part on, because there's too much money involved.
Very interesting.
So I wouldn't surprise me if they raise at a much higher level in 2026. To maybe take on another university or whatever it happens to be. But the price is going to be much higher by that stage because of the news. So, and they definitely don't need any money now. And they, as you said, I think they could fund the university for the 3 years at £500,000 a year, and also probably take on the first year of another university here in the United Kingdom. So, yeah. Amazing potential. one of those blue sky jobs. Now, it could all go pear-shaped, but the reality is I don't think it would, because the connection and the potential IP has got to be worth many times the current value.
Probably got 2 to 3 years for it to go wrong. So, you know, there's time, isn't there, for it to go extremely right, but also time for it to go extremely wrong as well. So, it's, you know, hopefully it's not one of those where you put your money in and it's black or white within two months. It's
no chance. This is a story that you're going to follow. But I think, you know, if you do the comparisons of this type of technology and these type of individuals compared to what's happening in the US, then, you know, for instance, the guy, Harry, I forget his name, Harry Rumery or whatever his name is. Sorry, I'm rubbish with names. But Harry, who is the world expert, is actually the guy who is running the quantum computing expo in 2026. So all the people in quantum computing world will go to this conference, and Harry is the chair of it.
Okay. Excellent. Well, and they've also got an interesting shareholder, which also happens to be your next NAP.
Ah, yes. My next one is Guardian Metal Resources. And as I already explained, all of the people who are involved in Delta Gold are also involved in GMET. Okay. You've got Oliver Friesen, who is effectively a big shareholder and a founder of Delta Gold. You've got Jamie Tosh, who runs the back office for GMET and is also a founder member of Delta Gold. You've got Mark Burnett, who is Ned in GMET and founder of Delta Gold. And you've got Michael Jones, who is the CEO and founder of Delta Gold. So GMET, why do I think GMET's going to do well? The joke is I picked GMET on the roast as well, because I'm so confident of it. And I picked it at £1.10 a week ago. And in that week, it's gone up to £1.48. So I'm already up over 30-odd% in the roast prediction. But I'm still picking it at £1.48. Now, why? Because it's got a market cap of around £240 million. I believe with the amount of in-ground assets it's got in tungsten, copper, garnet, silver, it had 6.6 million ounces of silver. That alone, what's 6.6 million times 100? It's a lot, right? $660 million worth of silver. Okay, obviously our in-ground valuation, which you have to take with a pinch of salt. The reality of it is through all the hard work Oliver has done, all the work that Michael Jones has done, who's the CEO of Delta Gold, this is now going to list on the New York Stock Exchange in February. So in February, it's going to list on the New York Stock Exchange. And just to add spice to it, Mr. Trump has just decided to put together his company, which is his socials company, and a company that wants to create, or already has created, fusion reactors, okay, to create unlimited energy, okay? Now, why that is important is that the fusion energy needs huge tonnage of tungsten. The only tungsten available in the US that will be available in the next 2 years is probably going to be Guardian Metal Resources. The government's already given them one grant for Desert Scheelite. I'm expecting another grant for Tempa Ute, and I'm expecting it to go onto the US market, and I'm expecting it to go bananas.
No, tungsten, I you know, I've always associated tungsten with military use. So this is, like, for me, a new use for tungsten.
Yeah, yeah, they need it.
Of course, with all these AI data centers, they do. Correct?
We need it for the military, without doubt. Okay? The military, or what is it now? The Department of War, the DOW, okay, in the US. We need it for this. But Mr. Trump has just put all his eggs in the basket of fusion technology, right? Along with his social network. He's just bought this company. What do you think is going to happen to the biggest tungsten asset in the US when it goes on the US stock market? What do you think is going to happen? It's going to go bananas. It's already going bananas. I mean, the price we're talking about is 148. 161 was paid in the US before Christmas, or on the OTC market. Okay. Now, why am I up for it? Oliver's got a lot of experience now, and you know, extremely good CEO, both communications wise and what he's doing. I think the old hand of the chairman there is also very good. I think he's got Michael Jones with a lot of experience, and especially in US markets as well. And he's got a fantastic team around him. It takes more than one person to create this business. So, yeah, I just think it's actually done over 200% for the last 2 years on the run. I think even this next coming year, it's going to do even better than that. I think potentially, it wouldn't surprise me if that becomes a £10 share. It really wouldn't. And that would value
it. Well done.
Billion.
Yeah, very well done. Very well done. Yeah. Really good job.
Okay. So that was number 8. Number 9 is Extract Resources.
Extract Resources.
Do you know anything about Extract Resources, Graham?
Colin Bird is behind it, but I don't know any much behind that.
Okay, so it's Colin Bird Company, is correct. Look, Extract Resources has had one of those roller coasters, okay? 3 years ago, Extract Resources was the darling of the market. They thought they were going to have a big asset in Australia with 2 million tons of contained copper in Bushranger, a huge amount of drilling, 30-odd thousand meters of drilling. It was all ready to rock and roll, and then we realized that the grades were just a little bit too low, okay? So the price crashed from, I think, 8p to 0.5p over a period of time, okay? So disaster. Now, that was also because the markets have been rubbish and all the rest of it as well, yeah. But now we're sitting with these assets, so make your own decision. The Bushranger asset becomes viable at $10,000 copper, okay, because of the ore sorting. It's 1.3 million tons of contained copper. You do the maths how much that's worth. It's a lot of money. It is basically, I think, over 10 billion at 10,000, okay? You then look at the price of copper today. It's closing in on $13,000 a ton. Now, all of a sudden, it's very profitable. And every dollar that is added to the copper price makes it more interesting. How much is this asset worth? I don't know. But my guess is, right now, if somebody came along and offered them $50 million, they'd probably say no. Okay?
They would say no.
I think that's my guess. At $50 million, I think it's way too cheap for what it's going to be.
What's the market?
£7 million. They just raised. Okay. Now, that's not the only asset. That's actually valued. That's valued in the share price at £0. Okay. So that's not even in the equation, right? They sold a gold asset that was in Mozambique that was having difficulties. As in, Colin didn't think they were getting their first share of what was available, okay? But they sold the minority stake in that for around $15 million. They have still to receive $7.5 million of that, and the money is coming, because with $4,500 gold, for sure it's coming. It's very profitable. So the company is owed about $7 million, okay, from the from that project. Okay. On top of that, they own a stake in Silver King, which is a copper silver project in Zambia, which I have visited. And basically artisanal mines all over it, huge copper grades, huge silver grades. And that's going to start producing this year in 2026. It's going to have copper and silver. They're only going to have 35% of that because they're going to own 70% of the main project, which is a much bigger place. Okay. So that's one asset. The other asset then is they have now antimony mines in Morocco. And again, there's artisanal working on it. And, you know, stuff is coming out of the ground. There's already a stockpile on the ground. They recently raised £2 million for those two assets so that they could produce antimony and they could produce the copper silver in Zambia. So those two assets, with the cash that they're going to inject, are both going to be producing metal in 2026. Okay? So they back up more than £7 million of market capitalization. On top of that, there's $7 million to be paid to Extract. One of the things that has to happen is that they have to go underground in Mozambique, which they're planning to do. But basically, that's an if. That would mean that they're only owed $4 million, not $7 million. But that's for negotiation, if you like. But the big thing is if copper goes to what I think it's going to go to, which is $15,000 a ton in 2026, then Bushranger is worth a few $100 million.
Again, it just a little bit reminds me a bit of Ajax, in that they've got all these projects in quite sort of diametrically opposed geographically speaking. You know, one in Morocco, one in Zambia, one in Australia. Yeah, how do they manage that? You know, and to extract, coincidental.
Extract also has some licenses in Zambia as well as the Silver King thing. But the scenario is that Colin Bird has always been a African-based scenario, and you've got Morocco and you've got Zambia, both in Africa. The Bushranger scenario was the focus of Extract until 3 years ago. And then it couldn't become the focus. Because basically we couldn't sell it. And that was the whole plan. It was going to be sold for a couple of hundred million. Now, what do? You sit there, you do a bit of work. You did all sorting on it to make it that the price came down to $10,000 a ton. And you wait. Now, we've waited. You said to me before we were making all the choices, timing is everything, right? And I'm telling you now, timing is now. For Extract, as in, if you want to buy into a market cap of £77 million, my view is that during 2026, if the copper price goes to where it is, there is no reason why Extract can't be worth £70 to £100 million. No reason why not, right? Now, what are the downside risks? Copper goes down, the antimony price goes down. The silver price goes down, the copper price goes down, they don't get the metal out the ground that they think is there. All of those things are risks, okay? But I think if either the antimony works or Silver King works and they get the cash back, it's worth two or three times what it's worth at the minute. The reason why the price is stuck where it is because they raised £2 million at 0.6p, and we've had this churn for a few months. That is going to disappear. The price is going to bounce up to 1.2, 1.5p, in my view. And then we've got a whole load of warrants there as well. Okay. But once they're all churned and people actually see that Bushranger starts to come into play, then it's going to be a different game. Anyway, my view. It's going to be.
Oh, it's really interesting. That's really interesting. I think it seems to me that the Bushranger project's sort of there, you know, being a bottom, you know, what do they call it? The bottom drawer job. You know, you stick it in there and wait for time to work on its side. And then the Silver King and the Moroccan project are going to be their sort of cash cows. And hopefully that will pay for the company, you know, along with the warrants being exercised, hopefully, and the cash flow from these various projects. Will keep the company going, and hopefully the Bushranger. Seems to me that that's an outright sale on the Bushranger, unless they. I don't know what would the capex be to develop that.
Capex would be huge. It will be a sale. It will either be a full out sale or a fully carried situation for maybe 15-20%. Yeah. Either way. Yeah. It's going to be worth a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't forget, Colin Bird is probably the only one on the AIM market that has sold a big project in the last sort of decade. You know, when he sold that asset in Zambia to, I forget who he sold it to now, because the name escapes me, but for $290 million. So nobody else has done it. Now we're coming into a time where I believe with the metals market that's all going to change. Things are going to start moving. Okay, let's move on to the next one. WeCap. And that's all yours. You're the one who convinced me of this one.
All mine. So WeCap, market cap's about £10 million. The share price is about 2.1p. They're listed on the Aquis market. What do WeCap do? They're an investment company. They own 11.8% of a business called WeShop. And WeShop are listed on the NASDAQ. Their market cap is about, well, it's very, very large. It's in between $1.5 and $2 billion. By my calculations, WeCap's holding in WeShop is worth about $142 million, which if you then turn it into pounds, is about £105 million. Divided by the number of shares in issue, which is about 443 million shares, it works out to be about 24p a share versus 2.1p. So there's a massive difference between what their investment's worth, arbitrage, but we've got to also look at why that's the case. Well, first of all, they've got a £7 million bond, which needs to be repaid back to the principal at some stage. That's due to be repaid in May. And WeCap cannot sell their holding in WeShop until November this year. So something's going to have to be addressed. Either they are allowed to sell their stock prior to the lock-in period, which then will then help them pay off the loan, or they renegotiate with the bondholder and say, can we pay you back in a year's time or 18 months' time? In either case, that will be very value-enhancing for WeCap shareholders, in my opinion. Another risk, of course, is the actual lock-in itself. So let's assume that they push back the loan until, you know, 18 months' time. We're still locked in with WeShop shares. Now, WeShop shares, for all I know, I mean, they're trading. They started at $20. They're now trading at $111. They could collapse, or alternatively, they could thrive. It's still very early stages, and I know John Garner, who is the founder of WeShop, has been promoting the WeShop company extremely well on all the major news outlets. And you know, you'd hope that that momentum and that traction will gather momentum. Hopefully, at some stage, WeShop will raise serious amounts of cash to underpin WeShop's valuation, which in turn will hopefully help revalue WeCap share price itself. The other thing we have to watch out for is our bloody exchange rate, because despite our perceived weak government, the British pound against the dollar is weakening. It's now $1.35. So if you're a tourist, this is great. But as a holder of US stock, when you're turning that back into pounds, it's not so funny. So, you know, hopefully the exchange rate doesn't deteriorate too much to weaken our valuation. So that's the That's my little pitch on WeCap.
Yeah, I'm a shareholder, and I think the arbitrage is going to work out very nicely. I think the WeShop idea, as in everybody who buys products on certain websites, is going to be part owner of the stock, is going to become a meme type thing, and you know, I think people will benefit from it. And, you know, I think that's already happening and will continue to happen. And if that gets any real momentum, then I think, you know, the price of the WeCap stock in the US now will be a thing of the past. I think it could be worth a lot more. The next one is Bizant Resources. Hope Ngarab in Namibia, copper, gold, silver, resources, basically just signed deals for the plant now so that they can process it. They're going to create a copper and silver and gold substitute, or not substitute, what's the word I'm looking for? Copper and gold solution. And effectively, the financial numbers, and Charles has run this, you know, to its infinite degree, is probably going to be between $30 and $40 million free cash flow in the first year, and then higher than that in the second year. And then they're going to be putting the drill bit down on the VMS system that is 17 kilometers long, to get themselves 500,000 tons of contained copper. Currently worth £12 million market capitalization, which is absolutely ridiculous valuation for what they have. I don't need to say any more. It's going to be worth more. I cannot see how it won't be worth more. What could go wrong? Well, we could have World War III. We could have a disaster in Namibia. All of those things could happen, but highly unlikely. And, you know, this is now gone way past the situation where we're not going to have copper and gold and silver coming out of the ground. So it's a big conviction for me that that one's going to make you money. And the final one that we've got here is Jubilee Metals. Now, Jubilee Metals has gone through a transformational year this year, sold all of its processing in South Africa, which was effectively chrome with platinum PGM metals on the side. They didn't own anything other than the processing. So they were at the mercy of the miners. They were at the mercy of increasing prices across the board. They were at the mercy of the South African government as well. And the margins were tiny. What they've done is they've moved their production now to Zambia. We've got two processing plants. They're now owning their own mines in Zambia as well. They're going to get $90 million in total from the sale. The current market cap is around $100 million. And subsequently, we're in a situation where the actual assets are worth about £20 million. It doesn't make any sense. It should be worth significantly more than this.
The one that I have put on my moonshot is a company called Emerson. I don't think it's as it is black and white, because they're in an arbitration litigation situation. So they will either win or not, and it will take time before we know the outcome. But Emerson is this potash business, development potash business in Morocco. And what happened earlier this year was that Emerson had decided to take arbitration proceedings against the United Kingdom of Morocco. The Kingdom of Morocco. As a result of that, they are suing effectively for about $2.2 billion. Their market cap, from what I see here, is about £29 million or 2.3p a share. And you know, their cash burn, they burn about £4 million a year. They've got litigation funding for about $11 million, which will, you know, keep them going for probably the next few years without having to sort of tap the litigation funds for it. But I think their chances of success are very high, but at the same time, you can't rule out that the Kingdom of Morocco has almost, I can't say unlimited resources, but it has a very large amount of resources which they can tap into to fight their cause. There's also, you know, like diplomatic relations. So you've got things like, you know, the relationship between Morocco and the United Kingdom and how will that interplay? I think the royal families do have a good relationship. And I think how will that play out if word gets out that a British company that's been operating out of Morocco has been, which has really not put a foot wrong, has done everything by the book, and has been told that it doesn't own the rights to carry on doing their business. I don't think that would go down particularly well with diplomatic relations between the two countries. So I think there could actually be a sort of out of court settlement before it ever gets into arbitration, but we'll have to see. So another moonshot that has been bestowed upon me by my erstwhile colleague Kevin is African Pioneer. AFP is the ticker. The market cap is £2.3 million. They are focused on Botswana, Zambia, and Namibia. Very similar to actually the areas that Colin Bird seems to have a sort of affinity to with his other companies that we've spoken about earlier. The market cap is extremely low. And, you know, this is obviously something that has the potential to, as Kevin says, is a moonshot. Anything you can further say about African Pioneer?
Okay, so African Pioneer, main asset is in Namibia, on Gombo. Basically, they have actually more copper than Bazan currently, copper, gold, silver, and effectively a mining license for 15 years as well. They also had assets in Zambia and also in Botswana. The reason why I've chosen this as my moonshot is got a £2 million market capitalization, and the assets alone are worth probably 10 times that, maybe more. And yeah, I just think it's going to benefit from Bazant, because Hope and Gorib is going to be working within Namibia, and African Pioneers on Gombo main asset is close to Windhoek, which we visited. And it's just a stupid valuation, simple as that. So that's why I've chosen it.
Kim, do they do any, is there any crossover? I know they've got the same chairman, but do they actually do business with each other? Do they me at all?
There isn't at the minute, but I perceive that if somebody comes into country to help Bazant after the initial Hope and Gorib thing, then I think also African Pioneer will be involved in that situation as well,
yeah.
is my view, because it just makes a lot of logistical sense, both from a processing point of view and also just a economies of scale point of view in the country, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a tiny market cap, £2.3 million.
Yeah. And It's a stupid valuation.
And I see Jonathan Swan's got a 13% stake in this company.
Correct. Jonathan believes it's going to do very well, and I believe it as well. So, yeah.
He's got a big stake in Guardian Metals as well. So hopefully he can work his magic.
Indeed. Okay. What about Gfinity then?
So Gfinity is my moonshot, along with Emerson, I explained earlier. Gfinity has been a basket case ever since it IPO'd, I think, in 2015. So it's been on the market for 10 years. I think it started at 17p a share, peaked to between 30 and 40 pence, and now it's a fraction of a penny. I think it's at 0.0325p. So it's about 3% of a penny. And so I think a lot of people have just given up on the stock. And if you know, someone that sells, say, £1,000 worth of stock will send the shares down, like, you know, 10% or something. It's so illiquid. But, you know, alternatively, it's very liquid on the upside as well. They've got, yeah, the market cap's about £1.7 million. They've got about, well, they raised 350 grand, and then I think they had some money left over from before. So I suspect they've got about £500,000 of cash left. They are involved in esports publishing. So what does that mean? It means they run lots of different websites and they get advertising on the back of it. I think they've got about 10, 11 websites that they do. But on top of that, they have got involved in this company called Connected IQ, and that's through license, but they have the option to acquire the company. And Connected IQ is to do with advertising through these connected TVs. You know, when you watch your TV now, Kevin, if you've got one of the latest smart TVs, they have all these apps. And if you watch streaming services now, you often get adverts, don't you? If you're watching Amazon Prime, you can't watch a film without getting an advert in the middle of it. If you watch YouTube now, you can't watch that without getting an advert. So there's so many different things where you're now getting advertised, even if you don't want it, you're getting advertising. And what Connected IQ does is it can recognize millions of different logos and it can detect emotion. So if they see a logo, which, I don't know, let's say, for example, it's BMW, and you've got emotion, you see a man with a very victorious smiling face, that can, you know, that logo with the sort of positive emotion could evoke an advert of, say, BMW cars in the commercial break. Do you see what I mean, Kevin? So it's something like that, where they work with the brands and try and integrate those adverts based on the content that's being broadcast and the TV show that you're watching. So it's very avant-garde and very sort of futuristic, but it's something which could do extremely well. It's early stages, but they've just employed a new sales guy. I think David Halley, who's the CEO, has been working sort of tirelessly to steady the ship. He's backed by a guy called Robert Keith, who was one of the founders and directors of Eidos. You remember Lara Croft? You remember the Tomb Raider? I don't know if you remember Tomb Raider, this video game. It was very popular back in the noughties. And, you know, I think he went on to do some great things with Microsoft. So he's, you know, a very wealthy investor that's backed Gfinity all the way down. And I think he just does not. He will not give up until this becomes successful. You know, David Halley himself has had two very successful exits. And I think he is also extremely tenacious and he will not give up until this becomes a success. So that's my, you know, that's my moonshot. What could go wrong? Well, if they carry on with the trend that they have, you know, pretty much throughout its history, they'll just burn through the cash and run this company into the ground. So they really need to make this work and time will tell. Okay, well, that's it. That's a wrap, folks. Thank you so much for watching Kevin and my's wants to watch, shall we say. Don't forget, they have, you know, they're higher risk than perhaps your average FTSE 100, FTSE 250 company. The spreads are wider. These are not recommendations. They are wants to put on your watch list. You have to do your own research. But remember to, if you like what you see, to like and subscribe. And remember, mum's the word. Thank you very much.
This podcast was brought to you by Monday Upbeat Markets. If you would like to appear on a future episode of the Mums Podcast, please email mondayupbeatmarkets@gmail.com.